Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Fantasy Foot Beer Podcast. I'm James Kemp, joined as always by my good friend and fierce fantasy rival, Dr. Michael Stewart. Stu, how are you feeling, buddy?
I'm feeling okay, James. A little bit sassy, but that's just from our previous talks before we turned on the recording. I'm doing good. It's Tuesday again. Lovely, another hot day here in central Indiana. I'm sweating. I'm ready for September, not only for football, but because it's hopefully going to cool down a little bit, and that'll be nice. However, I want to know how you are doing tonight, James, before we get into this action-packed episode.
I'm doing all right. I had a big, busy day running all over Kingdom Come, taking Indy to get groomed. And I love slash also hate when Indy goes to the groomer, because when he gets home, he's, like, so soft, and he is, like, traumatized by getting a bath, so he wants to be real close to me. But also, he's at his softest and also sheddiest right after a bath. So his hair gets all over me, and it got in, like, my lunch, and that was gross. So, yeah, I'm doing great. Thanks for asking.
Yeah.
But we have a really packed next two episodes. We're recording two tonight. We'll get one to you out today, Tuesday night, and the next one will drop on Thursday night. And we are talking about the NFC West. And all of these teams have fantasy-relevant players, unlike last week when we talked about the AFC South, which was sad. But all of these teams have fantasy-relevant players with a lot of questions. So this is going to be a great episode to listen to, this one and the one coming up later this week. And I'm as excited to talk about this as I am to hear what you have to say, Stu, because on a lot of these, it's like, you know, do we even know what to say about these? But anyway, I don't think we have any news really to talk about. There were some injuries last week during the preseason. Stu, you got anything you want to talk about news-wise?
I mean, there were a couple things. People that were, you know, deep flyers to be fantasy relevant. Former Purdue Boilermaker Rondale Moore is going to miss the season, which kind of stinks. We thought he was going to be something coming out of the draft. Alexander Mattison, backup running back for the Dolphins behind, or maybe just in front of, Jalen Wright on the depth chart. He injured his neck, had surgery, and is out for the season. Also, minor things like, I mean, Matt Stafford's still trying to heal up, but we'll talk about him a little bit later. Landon Dickerson for the Eagles, offensive lineman, left hurt, and we don't know if he's going to be ready for week one. Najee Harris is still not practicing, an element that gives me any idea if he's going to be ready for the first week of the season. Although, I was seeing on certain message boards people asking their optometrist friends about the Najee Harris injury, and that made me laugh, because obviously they have no idea, I have no idea. But it's fun, and it's funny. So just those short little things, thankfully, James. Nothing too crazy.
Well, when we do find out about the Najee Harris thing, I expect you to know before anyone else does. So I will just be, like, texting you every morning. So, like, what's Najee's eye look like today?
They need to just release pictures of it.
You are pretending not to know, but I know you do. But anyway, I think we're ready to dive right on in this. I think we're going to start with the Los Angeles Rams. And there are several places we could start, but I think that wide receiver is probably the best place for us to kick this off with Puka Nacua. And the picture we got going out on Instagram today, Puka Nacua is just a majestic being. Just so cool.
So but suave.
So suave. Swaggy, as the kids said in 2010. But anyway, Puka Nacua is currently sitting, I'm seeing PPR, wide receiver 5. When he's been healthy, he has been extremely productive, kind of taking the role of Cooper Kupp, as he did in that offense before him. As far as, like, raw skills go, he is very shifty. He's really good at getting separation. And despite not having the biggest frame in the world and not having, like Tyreek Hill speed, he still does a really good job with really crisp route running. And he is a really good target for an aging quarterback like Matt Stafford to throw to, who Matt Stafford having his back problems. It might not be Matt Stafford. It might be Jimmy Garoppolo. So, Stu, I guess we're... Because I don't think either Matt Stafford or Jimmy Garoppolo are going to be drafted this year. Stu, where do you think Puka Nacua will end up being hurt by the lack of quarterback consistency this year?
Yeah, it's really hard to say exactly because, you know, Matt Stafford's a great quarterback. He's been a great quarterback for a long time. I've said it before. I'll say it again. He's a warrior. He fights through pain. He was supposed to be in practice on Monday. They reported that he was going to be in practice, but then he stayed in street clothes and didn't do any drills. So, you know, again, the longer this goes on, the more worry we need to have for his playmakers, because Jimmy Garoppolo, he's just not a match for even Matt Stafford at Matt Stafford's slightly advanced age. So Puka Nacua and as well Davante Adams, who we'll talk about later, I've been seeing them slide a little bit. Puka towards the end of the first round, he's still taken in the first round more often than not, but we're still 3 weeks out, 2.5 weeks out. I don't even know what the timeline is, but we still have some time for Matt Stafford to continue to worry us and Puka to continue his slide. I think it would be criminal if he dropped to the end of the second round, but I wouldn't be surprised if he found a home in the early second round, people willing to take someone like him then. I mean, he's a great talent. Like, he only played 11 games last year due to injury in the early parts of the season, but he ended up with 106 targets in 11 games, 6 more games of that. He's a target hog, a target monster. He almost eclipsed 1,000 yards. He caught the most receptions of any rookie ever just 2 years ago, and he was down in the touchdown department last year, but he was still a very serviceable wide receiver. He has the ability and the capacity to do far, far more. So it all hinges upon the health of his quarterback, because Jimmy Garoppolo, you get serviceable, probably high wide receiver 2 numbers, but that's not where you're drafting Nacua. You're drafting him to be at the very least wide receiver 6 through 12. We need to see it. I'd love for more clarity on the Matt Stafford situation. We're not going to get it. So that risk is going to get baked into Puka's ADP, and he's going to continue to slip, in my opinion. I'm not letting him out of the mid-second, though. I would take him there in a heartbeat.
I think definitely if he's there in the second, that's an auto draft. But let's say, Stu, you've got the late... you're somewhere late in the first round, and you're looking at a lot of good wide receivers that you could take there. I had this question today. Am I taking Puka or am I taking Nico Collins? That's a tough question for me, considering Nico Collins at least has a passer I trust, mm-hmm. and I know will probably consistently be on the field. Puka, I don't trust Jimmy G, and I would love to trust Matt Stafford to be healthy. But I can't really do that. So what I think I might. I think I'm leaning Puka Nacua, but Nico Collins is just seeming more and more attractive at that position for me. Where would you go there?
Yeah, I'm kicking around a couple names. I think right now I'm looking at standard ADP. Puka's at wide receiver 5. He's got Amon-Ra St. Brown, Nico Collins, and Brian Thomas directly below him at 6, 7, 8. I think Amon-Ra, I would take over Puka at this point pretty easily. Nico is a little questionable, and I would continue to take Puka over Brian Thomas Jr. Nico, I think I would agree with you, James. I think I would take Puka over him at this point, but again, we're weeks away from the beginning of the season. I know Matt Stafford's not going to get like preseason snaps. He doesn't need it after playing for 17 years, but I need to get him on the field. I need to get him in pads and in a helmet before I really want to pull the trigger on Puka before someone like Nico Collins.
So we've got all these questions about Puka Nacua. Imagine what we've got to say about Davante Adams, the number 2 option in this in the receiving offense. Currently seeing PPR wide receiver 16. Davante Adams, as we all know, made really history in Green Bay as an incredibly consistent fantasy football wide receiver 1. When Aaron Rodgers left, Devontae Adams also left, went to the Raiders, wasn't very fun there. Eventually went to reunite with Rodgers in New York. Wasn't that fun there. And now we see Devontae Adams, who wanted to play with Matt Stafford in L.A., possibly being reunited with Jimmy Garoppolo. But Devontae Adams, as we've seen in the last few years, it's hard to really gauge whether or not he's still the guy that we used to know and love. He's definitely lost a step or two. His hands are still excellent. He still gets pretty good separation. I don't like him at wide receiver 16. I am not looking to take him at that position. I'm seeing him in the fourth round right now, going ahead of guys like Devontae Adams, going ahead of guys like Marvin Harrison Jr., but he's in that same range as those guys, with like Mike Evans, that sort of thing. I don't like this situation. It feels really weird, especially for Devontae Adams, knowing he is not going to be the focal point there. So, Stu, what do you think?
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to kind of dissect it, because he came into New York with a quarterback who already loved him and supplanted Garrett Wilson as the alpha, the number one. I don't think that's going to be the same thing when he joins this Rams team with Puka Nacua and Matt Stafford, whom he's never played with. In ADP and standard, he's going right around the same spot, wide receiver 16 across the major platforms. And I mean, looking at it with the questions about Stafford that we've already beaten like a dead horse, as well as, I mean, he's 32 years old. I don't think he lost that much of a step from last year. I mean, he was extremely productive last year, but it's just he's going to slide faster than Puka for me. I'm going to say that he belongs somewhere down in the wide receiver 18 range, somewhere along the lines of Garrett Wilson in now alone in New York, you know, Terry McLaurin, provided he gets a contract, somewhere along those guys. So leapfrogged by like Mike Evans, Marvin Harrison Jr., people like that. He's not sliding terribly. He's not down in the Cortland Sutton, Xavier Worthy range, but he's definitely sliding a little bit for me, and I'm not exactly chomping at the bit to get him in drafts because, again, we just don't know, and he doesn't have the youth and the rapport that Puka Nacua does with, you know, Matt Stafford. So it's going to be really interesting to see where he ends up. I'm not going to be too many times on my roster until, you know, unless something crazy happens. But really, really fun. Really, really fun to digest.
Yep, agreed. Not really any other wide receivers to think about there.
Nope.
For the Rams. You do have Tutu Atwell, Jordan Whittington. But the Rams did draft one early, two early offensive players, but the one that we expect to make the most impact early is Terrence Ferguson, rookie out of Oregon. They took him in the second round. He is not expected to be fantasy relevant early. He's slated as the tight end 38, but that is above Tyler Higbee, who's been around for a long time. Terrence Ferguson at Oregon was a reliable pass catching tight end, as is, you know, referenced by his second round pedigree there. And Oregon had a very good offense last year as well. I'm not saying draft him. I am saying I think he is going to be more interesting in that conversation for rookie tight ends than we think he's going to be. Because everybody's looking at Tyler Warren and Colson Loveland. I think that this could be an interesting wrinkle to that. I just get a feeling about this guy. I don't know. We don't really need to talk about tight ends that much, but Stu, if there's anything you wanted to throw in there.
I do, yes. Specifically about Terrence Ferguson, one thing you want to watch out for, and it's not like you're looking for him in drafts anyway, but he does have a groin injury. He did return to practice today and was running routes, so that looks to be hopefully behind him. But any missed time for rookies is kind of worrisome in camp. We need those reps. We need that work with the ones. So maybe gets to fantasy relevance. Maybe he sneaks onto rosters later on in the year if all goes well. But yes, Higbee is there. Higbee will have a couple good games, also not fantasy relevant. And then they have like Colby Parkinson, who flashed last year and then ultimately is supplanted by Terrence Ferguson. So why don't we go ahead and talk about Kyren Williams next? We'll get negative talking about Matt Stafford if we even want to address him more directly, because I think we've said all there needs to be said about Matt Stafford. But Kyren Williams, fresh off of an extension, yet still sliding down draft boards that I've seen in mocks. He's not exactly what I would call efficient, and that seems to be what people's biggest knock against him is. But he's almost a 1,300-yard rusher. He gets the lion's share. He doesn't have anybody in the rushing game outside of Blake Corum who could threaten him. He's not going to get used as a punt returner, so people last year that got scared off of him, like me, because of that report, don't worry. He's a rock-solid, excellent running back. I mean, I don't understand why people aren't more excited about him. If they are slipping in the rankings, I'm happily going to pick him up if he lasts to the end of the second or even into the third round, God forbid. I mean, his average ADP is currently 10 across the platforms in standard, and it's right where he should be. I don't get why we would slide on him, James, and you're even higher on him than I am, so I want to hear what you have to say.
I've always been a big Kyren Williams fan. I was a big fan of him coming out of college. It's sort of because he was a Notre Dame guy and I'm a Notre Dame fan, but I was not surprised at all when he broke out for the Rams. And I have been, for really the last few years, much higher on him than any experts have been. Right now, I'm seeing a PPR running back 12, which I think is probably right in a sweet spot of where he should be. But for me, I think I'm putting him at running back 9 for me. I'm putting him above Jonathan Taylor. I'm putting him above Bucky Irving for me. And there might be a couple other guys that I like him better than. That's, some of that is bias, but most of that is just all of the ways he's shown he can be productive. As you said, not exactly productive, but he does show up in big opportunities, and he is very reliable through the air, which is something, especially for PPR with running backs, that we appreciate a lot. I see a lot of similarities to being kind of a smaller Austin Eckler in his prime. That's my comparison. I really like Kyren Williams, and I'm going to get him a lot this year if he continues to slide, because I'm seeing him in the third round a lot today, and that is just delicious for me. I love that so much, especially when so many really good running backs are going to be taken early. I love it. I love it. Talking real quick about his backup, Blake Corum, who drafted out of Michigan last year, a lot of people expected to take a much bigger role in that offense than he did. He ended up being a non-factor basically all year last year. Even when Kyren Williams had injuries, Corum never really was significant. And part of that was just the general state of that offense. But also, it makes you wonder whether or not Blake Corum really was as good of a running back as we thought he was coming out of college. He was incredible at Michigan on that national championship run. But we also saw the Rams draft a new running back in Jarquez Hunter out of Auburn this year. It was a fourth-round pick, so you're not exactly expecting him to jump into a big role immediately. But having also taken Corum last year gives you questions. And for me, none of those questions are about Kyren Williams' job security as the bell cow back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't pay a guy and then supplant him with a fourth-round pick.
Yep.
Cool. Glad we established that.
Good talk. I guess we have talked about Matt Stafford. Is this his swan song? It kind of feels like it.
I don't know. If it is, I'm going to be really sad, because he's almost been in, we've almost been playing fantasy football in our main league as long as he's been, you know, playing football. Like, it's been a long time. Had him on my team a fair few times. If it is, I salute him, because he's fun to watch, excellent player. Getting old sucks. Yep.
He deserves one last good run, but I think he should be done. That's just me. Kicker Josh Cardy. Fun name. Kicker 15. And defense. Currently seeing the Rams as the DST 10.
Could be sneaky good.
Could be sneaky good. All right, we ready to move over to San Francisco?
I am ready to talk about San Francisco. Another group of guys that we have a little bit of injury concern, a little bit of intrigue, and even some holdouts for contracts. So there's a bunch of stuff to talk about. We'll take a little while, but we can't start anywhere else, James. We have to start with the guy, Christian McCaffrey. I don't think he's even questioned to be the most valuable fantasy asset when healthy. It's just the fact that he is now 29 years old. He's been in the league for a little while through Carolina and now several years with the 49ers. And last year being so maligned, it was almost lost for him last year, dealing with Achilles tendonitis in both legs. He comes back. We're all excited, and then he gets a PCL injury almost immediately afterwards. So he appeared in 4 games. He was a 101 target in drafts last year, and nobody really questioned that, but really a huge disappointment. So you've got people that have been burned. You've got people that may not believe. Maybe they think he's getting old, but everything out of camp, and take that with a massive chunk of salt, has been that Christian McCaffrey is healthy. He looks explosive. He is ready to shoulder the load in a running back room that has been hampered by injuries already. It seems like Kyle Shanahan's running back rooms always are injured, but it looks like the Christian McCaffrey show to start the year. People have been questioningly taking him in the second round. Now he's come back into the first round. I think he's a first round draft pick. Maybe not in the first 6, but at least 6 through 10. You've got some people in even like the quote-unquote experts that are pounding on the table for Christian McCaffrey that he could absolutely just take over leagues. And to me personally, he feels like the ultimate, you know, home run swing to start off the draft. If you get Christian McCaffrey of 2 years ago, you've basically won your league already, as long as you kind of cruise. If he falls to injury again, you'd better have a backup plan. So James, I want to hear what you think about the man, the myth, the legend, CMC.
I've been trying to think all day about what I was going to say about Christian McCaffrey, and really about every single player we're going to talk about today on the 49ers. Christian McCaffrey, his injury history is no joke. We're all very well aware that he's been dealing with, you know, availability his entire career. But when he is available, he's a cheat code. He is a league winner, even if you take him early. And I think regardless of where he goes here, he probably should be a top 6 pick, if I'm being honest. But if he drops any further than that, he's the best value in the draft. And that's insane to think about as a first rounder. But I really worry about his ability to stay on the field. And that has always been the thing with him. He had a couple unexpected seasons where he came into San Francisco and was able to stay out there and was able to carry people to victories in fantasy. But how can we trust him after all these years? I trust the production. I don't know if I can trust the legs. That's it. And if he falls to me in like the middle of the first round, I feel like I have to take him because he is that good and his ceiling is that good. It's everything is pointing to me not to, but also he's Christian McCaffrey. Mm-hmm. And I think if you read between the lines here with what I'm saying and think about what my brain wants me to say, but I can't force myself to say it, I think you should fade him. I don't know how you can, but I think you should. And that's a really weird thing to have come out of my mouth. It feels like I'm in therapy right now, trying to admit difficult things, but that's where I'm at. That was hard to say.
That is a bold thing to say after I said this is a either win your league or lose your league move.
I mean, that is sort of what I said, just, you know, sadder.
Yeah. I mean, if you're made of stern stuff, if you got an iron stomach, or you're just playing for fun, CMC's right there. But if you've got, you know, a couple hundred dollars down on your league payment, I would be personally a little more averse to that risk. I don't want to lose my draft in round one, as I've said before. So as we continue on, we get into a mixed bag of receiving options for quarterback Brock Purdy. I want to start with the guy I'm most excited about, because the wide receiver room is a whole like soap opera to itself. Let's start with George Kittle, Mr. Smelling Salts himself. He said he was going to retire because the smelling salts might get banned. He feels like a great value. Like he's not Brock Bowers and Trey McBride, but he's not costing it that. He's still with the production. He's right there with them. And to get him a full round later feels awesome. In addition, we're going to talk about the soap opera of the wide receiver room. We may start off the year and he's one of maybe two credible downfield threats to catch the ball. So he's probably going to feast in the early part of the year. He was over 1,000 yards receiving, over 1,100 yards receiving last year, and he's fairly durable. He's had problems with injuries in the past, but last season was good for him on that metric, so hopefully that comes through again. He is a little bit older, but tight ends sometimes can still be pretty effective into their early 30s. I think in the third round, he's a great value. That's a great spot to get him. Although, overall, I'd rather get something else, like a running back or wide receiver. If you're following the podcast at any point this offseason, you've heard James and I beat the dead horse on waiting on your tight ends, because you can get better value in the earlier rounds. Don't pay that premium price for tight ends. But if you had to, or you really want to, George Kittle's probably the last of the three that I would do it for. James, let me hear it about George Kittle.
Yeah, George Kittle, one of my favorite football players for basically the last decade. Just an Iron Man kind of toughness about him, and he plays with this fun energy. Kind of plays like he's on Jackass, you know, like the. You guys know what Jackass is. But he has had his durability issues, and he is in his 30s. I think, Stu, you really hit it that he is the last of the top flight tight end options. And honestly, I think his ceiling is higher than Bowers and McBride. And that's nuts to say, but I think it is. Because when you look at that wide receiver room that we have across from him, there are so many questions in Ayuk, Juwan Jennings, Ricky Pearsall. Who is there a top flight option there? Is Brandon Ayuk going to return to his former form, or is he going to continue stinking? Is George Kittle going to be the primary passing option, kind of like he was last year? And George Kittle, he's one of the tight ends in the NFL who's not just like this new prototype of big body receiver. He's a great blocker. He is an incredible blocking tight end, kind of keeping this lost art that we saw with like Antonio Gates type player that's gone by the wayside. And George Kittle, I can't say enough about how much I like watching him play football. Tight end 3 probably could be tight end 2 with a ceiling to explode more than that. But, you know, don't reach on tight ends.
Yeah, I was going to say, you taking him in the third?
I'm not. No. I'm not. Especially not if Kyron Williams has fallen in the third. I've actually seen this week George Kittle rising in drafts. I've seen him going a lot in the second.
That's disgusting.
Surprises me, especially considering that I've seen Trey McBride falling, who we'll get to in our next episode. But, Stu, we've been delaying it for too long. We got to talk about this wide receiver room.
It's a fun one. It's a fun one, absolutely.
That's an interesting way of saying it. It reminds me a lot of the Packers wide receiver room. There's no clear-cut number one. There's a lot of guys who could be a number one. Brandon Ayuk, we've obviously seen before, be that guy. Ricky Pearsall, Juwan Jennings, both flashed last year, but never made anything really stick. Also, just a ridiculous rash of injuries across the 49ers team last year made it really hard for anybody to get any kind of momentum going. So I don't really know what we have, which means we're getting these guys going pretty late in the draft. I'm seeing all three of these guys going between the 9th and 11th rounds, and they could be extremely good value if you are willing to take on some risk, because these guys are nothing if not risky to draft. Especially considering that this isn't like one young guy who we think could blow up on this team. This is three guys, one established guy, and two other young dudes who all of them could emerge as a number one option or could not and could just be there sitting on your bench all year, and eventually you drop them in like week eight for a handcuff running back.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying target them. I'm not saying don't target them. I'm just kind of putting a blanket statement on all three. Like, this is weird and hard to evaluate. Mm-hmm. Stu, do you agree, disagree? What do you think?
Oh, I agree. It's hard to evaluate, but I feel I've gotta buckle down and put some firm like statements to these guys.
Someone's got to do it.
The three of them. You said they all could be values in the draft. The only one, and I mean the only one, that I am considering drafting right now is Ricky Pearsall. If things stay the way that they are, I think Ricky Pearsall could absolutely, honestly, be a steal in the draft just because there's no one else to throw to. The top four guys in this room, Brandon Ayuk, Juwan Jennings, Pearsall, and then DeMarcus Robinson, three of those guys could feasibly not be there week one. Like, Brandon Ayuk, there was a report today, he's coming back, they're shooting for week six. Are you going to hold Brandon Ayuk in your IR slot for week six coming off of a devastating knee injury?
Probably
not. I'm not. Someone else can, but I'm not. Juwan Jennings is holding out for a contract. I've heard zero things about that. Maybe I'm just under a rock over here in Indiana. I'm not tuned into the San Francisco Times or whatever, but until I hear something, I'm not considering Juwan Jennings in drafts either. Someone else can take him. And while he flashed last year, I don't think he's got the pedigree or the talent to be... You say he could be number one option. That's great. But in fantasy, we're topping out at flex status or perhaps even wide receiver two in the greatest situation. Mm-hmm. For Ricky Pearsall, I am a little bit higher on. He's a former first-round pick. Late first round pick, mind you. His rookie season was derailed after getting shot with a handgun, which sucks. Like, nobody
happens
wants
to
see that. He did, however, in the last couple weeks of the season, he had two straight games with a touchdown. He had 10 targets and 141 yards against Detroit in kind of a shootout style game, and then continued that success into Arizona to tail off the season. If that continues, that looks like a great value in drafts. So he is one that I'm looking at as a bench target who could rise into flex status later on. He's got the least amount of risk associated with him because he's the one that's healthy or not suspended, because DeMarcus Robinson is suspended. So he is the only one I'm interested in. Ayuk, Jennings, right now, nada. Juwan Jennings could change. Yeah, Ayuk's not going to change. I loved Brandon Ayuk coming out of college. I was excited for him in his first few years in the NFL, and now it seems like his star has faded, and I don't know if that's ever going to come back. So, to round out the 49ers, we got to talk about Brock Purdy, which
corn
is...
Corn Jesus.
I don't know, kind of a boring conversation. He's fine. He'll be a starting quarterback option for people, but he's going to be one of the less exciting, you know, throw him in there because, you know, your family league took a run on quarterbacks early and you didn't want to draft, you know, Brock Purdy in the third round or something. I don't know. You waited for a really long time and now you got him. It's not exciting. He's serviceable, but nothing exciting. I keep saying the same thing. This is my analysis.
I think you hit the nail on the head. He's got panic draft written all over him. I don't think anybody's going into a draft aiming for Brock Purdy. I think I would probably take a few guys under him ahead of him, which is just to say Brock Purdy is going to be a high streaming option. I mean, look at his tools. He's not very mobile. He's an okay passer. His biggest thing he has as a feather in his hat is he's in a Kyle Shanahan offense, and, you know, Kyle Shanahan is a freaking genius. So even if Brock Purdy is at best a game manager, he's at best a game manager with an evil genius behind the screen pulling the strings. So Brock Purdy is gonna have a decent floor to him, but I don't think his ceiling is very high. He's probably gonna be matchup dependent, I think is fair to say. Basically just saying a bunch of different ways to say he's a streamer. And mm-hmm. He might not be a streamer who leaves your bench, but he's not going to be a consistent starter for you, even if he finishes the season as a top 12 quarterback. Mm-hmm. I think that's fair to say.
The end of QB1s gets very muddled. It's pretty interchangeable as far as statistics. I know that, you know, technically somebody has to be outside of the QB1, but the QB10 through 14 are all fairly comparable year in and year out. So,
and I'll sit on a hot take here. I don't think Brock Purdy is a QB1 this year. I don't think he's top 12.
I mean,
in fact, that's probably not even a very hot take. Like I'm seeing him ranked QB12. I don't think he is that.
Mm-hmm. I won't bet against you. It's not going to be one that I write on my card. And speaking of, we have not written any bets on our card for a little while. We're still sitting on CeeDee Lamb versus Jamar, more PPR points, and Jackson Dart over under 6.5 starts, which I still can't believe you took.
That was a really bad bet. I don't know why I did that. I just wanted to say something, and I feel kind of romantic about Jackson Dart. I loved watching him in college last year, and I think he's got tools to be really good in the NFL. But then, like, the Giants signed every old quarterback ever. But anyway, next episode we got to have a bet, and I think I got some in mind.
I'm sure we could figure something out. Could be like, is Kyler Murray going to have over under 0.5 meltdowns on the field or on the sideline?
Yeah.
But
something about Marvin Harrison Jr. being relevant. I don't know, but Stu, I think we're ready for last call.
I suppose. I really only have one beer prepared, so we'll see if last call is going to be the same thing for this episode as it is next episode. But I want to highlight, of course, another Indiana brewery, and I am highlighting tonight from Googman House Brewing Company. This is the Sunny Days Kolsch. So I got sick of you being the only person to talk about a Kolsch, so I decided to pick a Kolsch. This is a traditional German Kolsch with noble and light citrus characteristics. ABV is a light little 5.4. Pours nice and bright. Pretty decent rankings online. The experts are a little more high on this brew than the everyman, I suppose. But experts think it's got a ripe fruit aroma with floral scents, a very light malt backbone, lemon and pear ester notes shine through with just a hint of earthy hops. So something very pleasant, it sounds like, to drink on a sunny day. So Googman House Brewing in Indianapolis, Indiana. Go find it. Try it out. Let me know how it was on our socials, of course, on Instagram and X at FantasyFootBeer, as well as you can email it about us. Oh my God, what is wrong with me?
Email us about it.
Yes, at fantasyfootbeer@gmail.com. James, save me, man. It's like I've drank three Sunny Day Kolsches already. I can't speak. What are you drinking tonight?
I am not drinking a Kolsch, although I think it's fair for me to say I think Kolsch is my favorite style of beer, so welcome to the club. I'm not drinking a Kolsch tonight. I'm actually drinking from Lagunitas Brewing Company, taken from the one you've reviewed a lot, the Maximus Colossal IPA. I'm going to be honest. I don't know what constitutes as a colossal IPA. My assumption is that they took the double or triple IPA model and just, you know, like quadrupled it. It does say here it is a colossal take on a double IPA. Just tells me whatever they had in their brew schedule to go in for hops, they probably just like put in way more. It is a 9% ABV beer, but I also have for a beer fact of the day about the origins of the IPA style. So a lot of people think that the IPA comes from brewers trying to add extra hops to survive the journey to India to be exported there or whatever. That's not actually true. It is true that it was served a lot in India, but as with all things, it comes from British colonialism. So a brewer in London was already making this style of beer as a form of a bitter, which is and was a common style of beer at the time. And his specifically used a crap ton of hops, so much so that normal people wouldn't buy it. He had to sell it as like a medicinal drink, which people still didn't buy. But he just happened to know someone who was very high up in the British East India Company, and he was able to gain exclusive selling rights for British export beer in India. So that is where the term India Pale Ale comes from. And if I haven't bored you too much with that, let's go ahead and crack these bad boys in 3, 2, 1. It's definitely less interesting when it comes from a bottle, but
while I'm pouring this here,
Stu, want to give us last thoughts, last words?
Nothing too crazy to say tonight. Hope everybody's doing well. Interact with us on social media. We always love to hear the opinions, the rankings. How far are you letting Puka Nacua and Davante Adams slide? We want to know. We will see you in probably about 10 minutes or a couple days if you're listening to this today.
All right. Thank you, Stu. Let's wrap this one up. Thank you, every one of our listeners, for tuning in today. We appreciate you guys choosing us for your fantasy football stuff. We've only got a division and a half left to break down here. We're going to break down the second half of the NFC West next, and then it's just the NFC South, and then it's all draft time, baby. And I know that Stu and I are chomping on the bit. So for all of us here at Fantasy Foot Beer, for Dr. Michael Stewart, I'm James Kemp. Good night. Good talk.